Welcome to Vibe Talk Music. I'm your host, Vibe Queen. In this season, we will get vulnerable with a variety of guests discussing their journey to self-awareness and how we can level up the collective consciousness in the music industry. So let's vibe and talk music. This episode is brought to you by Artist Collective, guiding artists and entrepreneurs through the music industry. Learn more and join for free today at artistcollect.com and get back to the music. Hello and welcome back to another episode of Vibe Talk Music. I'm your host, Vibe Queen. This week I'm talking to guest Tyler Priest. Tyler is a first-generation Korean-American multi-instrumentalist who spans across many genres and forms of art. Residing in Chicago, he has dedicated his life to educating young people in music, mental health awareness, and self-love. He's currently the piano and keys player of the Fifth Star Band. So welcome, Tyler. I'm super excited to have you on the show. Before we get into our conversation, I just want to let everyone know that I've known you for a couple of years and you're definitely super, super talented, but you're also one of the kindest people that I've ever met. You truly, truly care for others. So I'm very grateful that you are on the show. So thank you so much for coming on.
Thank you so much. I appreciate that so much.
So yeah, well, we're going to dive right into the conversation. So one of my favorite topics is masculine and feminine energy. So I'm really excited that that was one of your favorite episodes of season one. Once for me, I understood the concept of that and knowing it had nothing to do with gender, you know, it just began to make a lot more sense to me. So, you know, I'm curious to know, like, were you familiar with this concept before listening to the episode, or was this something that was brand new for you once you heard the episode?
You know, it was one of those things that I was familiar with, but I didn't have a name for, I guess, the concept. There was no term for it in my head. So it was just something learned by life and learned through just being myself. But ultimately, it was just really cool to finally put a name to it and have something solid to kind of cling on to, you know, and that way it was a little easier and kind of made it seem like, oh, this is so familiar to so many people that there's an actual, you know, there's words for it. So that was really nice to see.
Gotcha. Okay. And so for those that are listening, you know, that may have never heard of this before, can you explain in your own words what masculine and feminine energy means to you?
Masculine and feminine energy, as in how sort of you present yourself and the things that we do, are some things are considered masculine and feminine in the way we put out that energy. And so there's just a sort of difference between just sort of the mindset of how we take a look at things. And for the masculine side, it seems to be a bit more on the, I don't want to call it the proactive side, but almost defensive, sort of kind of having to square up in your mindset, whereas the feminine one is more of the setup instead. The difference is kind of subtle, honestly, and some people put out more of that feminine energy or some of that masculine energy. And for a lot of my life, I don't want to say picked on or made fun of, but I would put out more feminine energy than masculine energy. And that's just who I am. It doesn't make me feel less of a man or anything like that. I just am who I am. So yeah, again, like that episode really helped me understand putting a term to it. So that was really nice.
Yeah. So for myself, I mean, I used to really lead with masculine energy. That is what I was modeled growing up. You know, it's what I saw my mom doing. She was very independent. So, you know, often we emulate what we see as kids. But, you know, once you recognize where it comes from, you now have a choice to change your behavior. So that's why I believe self-awareness is just so key. Masculine energy, you know, as I mentioned in the episode, is more of a dominant energy. It's more of a leading energy, energy to make a decision. So especially if you relate that to music, that's very important. And there's a time and place to lead with that. And feminine energy is more of receiving and intuition. So yeah, what you were saying makes complete sense. So with that being said, is there any advice that you would give, maybe specifically to men that may feel insecure about being in their feminine energy?
Right. Yeah, I guess any little bit of advice that I could give, and I do this with my students. I teach music as well. I just explain, you're just gonna be yourself. Like I guess you can pretend to be something else entirely, but ultimately that's gonna misalign you. It's gonna misalign your energies. If you just rather be yourself, whether that means you put forth your masculine energy or your feminine energy, just continue to put forth what you feel is right. And be, when people tell you be yourself, that's, I believe, what they mean. You know, saying like, just be yourself, blah, blah, blah. Sometimes that's great, sometimes that's bad, but with that piece of advice, the way it can be taken. But if you apply the masculine and feminine energy side of things, being yourself, really, it means not thinking about, okay, I gotta be a tough guy all of a sudden, or I gotta be really masculine, or put a real masculine energy vibe, or I'm not gonna be seen as worthy in the eyes of whomever. But really, that shouldn't ever be the case. You need to be able to put out your own energy, your natural vibe, what you want, how you feel, you know, and instead of trying to match whatever society or your friends or your community tells you you should be, just be yourself.
Yeah, I agree. Well, I mean, sometimes when you don't know who you are and, you know, or what you're supposed to be, your energy can be all over the place. And I know, like, when I was married, something that my ex-husband actually told me towards the end of our relationship was that he felt that he didn't think that I knew who I was. And once I really self-reflected on that, he was actually very, very much so right. And, you know, depression's a very, very real thing. And that's something that I struggled with in the past. And, you know, upon a lot of self-reflection and ultimately through meditation, that's when I realized that being able to step away from myself and observe, I was able to kind of realign myself. And that practice really, truly helped save my life amongst other tools. So sometimes when we feel lost or overwhelmed and we have no direction, you know, meditation can be one of those tools to kind of get us back to pausing and centering ourselves to get back into alignment with who we are and what is truly important to us. So Tyler, can you share with us what your meditation journey was like?
Yeah, absolutely. I've been meditating since I was about 8 or 9 years old. When I was younger, I had really bad anger issues, like really, really tough, almost like, okay, if you're not careful, dude, we're going to have to send you to a therapist because we don't know how to handle how angry you are all the time. And you can call it angst, you can call it whatever you want, but the bottom line was I was unacceptably mad at the world and the smallest little thing. And so my father taught me to meditate. He put it so simply to me that I just had to give it a try. And his idea of meditation was to try to go blank, to forget the outside world and to not think so much. Even if it was thinking about a white wall. And that's initially how I started meditating. It wasn't about just breathing. It wasn't about resetting my energy. It was just think of a white wall. Because that white wall, there's nothing, there's no scratches, there's no blemishes, there's nothing there. You need to then find how you want to find your energies through this. You want to be able to connect yourself back with the universe and the world around you. I didn't quite understand that's what meditation was to me until I was probably about 22 years old or so. And so for the longest time in my life, every time I was angry or upset or even irritated, agitated, or I felt like I had to get up and move around and stuff like that, I would go back to meditation. So every day for 5 minutes or so, I would just calm myself with a meditation. And I think so many people who use the phrase, I suffer from anxiety, I suffer from depression, or even, I guess it doesn't have to apply to people who say that necessarily, but these people, like my friends and family who use that term, always also say things like, I wish I could slow the world down for a minute. I wish I could hit a pause button on life and just relax. Give time to catch my breath. And that is what meditation is to me. It is a pause button on the world for 5, 10, 15, whatever, however long you decide to meditate for. That is your pause button. There is nothing else in the world except you capturing your breath. And capturing that breath helps me at least realign my energy, my chakras, if you want to call it that. And it allows me to bring back my sense of self, because sometimes the world is so loud you lose yourself to that noise. And meditation has evolved from being something that made me stop being angry to being able to put myself back into the world. I didn't feel like I was so out of body, I could be whole again.
And can you remember your very first experience with meditation? Like, do you have a first memory of that?
Yeah, because my dad would meditate with me for a little bit. And even if it was 30 seconds, he would get me started sometimes. I can distinctly recall the first time I saw the white wall. I was in my bedroom, and growing up in my bedroom, it was all sky blue. And with green carpets and my bed sort of to one side of the room, depending on, you know, was I sharing the bedroom with my little brother at the time, or was I alone with a piano in the corner eventually? But I remember sitting on my bed. I remember the bed was raised a little bit, and underneath there's drawers to the bed. And I remember sitting on top of this mattress that was really damn hard, and kind of sitting cross-legged style and just closing my eyes. And it must have taken a few times for me to get to the point where I saw my white wall. And it might not have been even in that first year, it might have taken me a bit, but sort of forcing myself to think white wall, white wall, white wall, which is kind of the opposite of the point of you know, doing the meditation, to concentrate so dang hard on one thing. But eventually I didn't have to repeat in my head white wall over and over again. My mind would just sort of go blank. And I do distinctly remember that first time when it kind of sort of hit me that all of a sudden the world didn't exist. The world was on pause. That white wall was in front of me, and all of a sudden it wasn't just one wall, but I was surrounded in a room of white. And that's sort of where I want to get back to for a lot of the time when I meditate, just because that's so zen and calming to me. But yeah, so it was pretty early on, but it definitely wasn't like the first year of meditation. And I don't think I would have gotten there if it weren't for my dad thinking white wall, white, or telling me to think that. So, yeah.
Wow, that's amazing. Thank you so much for sharing that. Yeah, even in my own meditation practice, I've learned that being able to focus on a specific object or a phrase or a mantra has helped me become way more still and more focused. So in the beginning, and sometimes even now, especially when I have a lot going on, you know, thoughts will definitely, you know, still consume. and I will find myself overthinking. And in the beginning, there's definitely a sense of judgment and feeling guilty, as if I'm not good at meditation. I'm not good at this. You know, we've definitely, you know, in a society of competition, right? So I felt like I needed to excel at meditation and be good at it. But when you really think about it, that defeats the whole purpose of the practice. So it's almost like you have to unlearn that. So, you know, those of you that are listening, starting with a guided meditation, you know, listening to music or somebody guiding you through it, focusing on an object or a word or a phrase or a mantra can be incredibly helpful when you're first starting out. And that's something that I highly suggest. So now, are you still very close to your dad, Tyler?
My dad is one of my best friends. I would go as far as even say he is my best friend, along with my brothers. I'm very, very close with my family. There's not really too many secrets between us in general. But yeah, I try to call my dad as often as I can. We just chat sometimes. Sometimes it is business. It's about, you know, checking in when I'm going to be able to visit them again and stuff like that. But for the most part, I can call my dad and just kind of shoot the shit about anything with him. So he's always been a treasure trove of good little hidden gems of knowledge and stuff like that. So yeah, I'm still very, very close with him.
Wow, that's beautiful. So I know that you mentioned to me that self-awareness is the realization of the space we occupy, not in our personal reality, but the universal reality, which is pretty deep. When did you come to that realization, or did you always have that knowledge and that knowing?
No, I have not always been part of that realization. Growing up, my parents didn't want me to be specifically spiritual or religious one way or another, but I do remember the first time I went to church, and we didn't really go to church a ton when I was younger, but we tried it because we wanted to. As kids, we wanted to experience that and like Buddhism and Judaism and zodiac signs, all that kind of stuff. And I just remember being in church and for the first time feeling, I guess, that feeling, that upliftedness. And it kind of opened my mind a bit to realize that I'm not the center of the universe. And I am not the most important thing in the world. And I exist in this universe, and I believe in things like destiny and being on this planet for specific reasons. And so it was sort of that church time, the first time I realized, okay, there's things much more important to me. How do I do my part? And then when I was about 16 years old, I got my first job at a grocery store, and the self-entitlement of some people finally had shown through, and I developed a special type of apathy towards this sort of idea, and empathy, hopefully I said that. My parents would constantly, like I said, I was a really angry kid. I had some issues, and my parents would constantly just say, the world doesn't revolve around you. There's others. They also raised me to believe that if you have the ability to do good in the world and you see evil, badness, not good things, and you have the ability to help, it is your duty to help. You must do this. And that's, you know, you to be a good person, you help others. And so I think just my whole upbringing in general helped me expand upon that idea. So it wasn't until I had to fill out your when I was answering those questions, I honestly hadn't really thought to write that kind of thing down. But I'm very happy that I did, because that is wholeheartedly how I feel.
You know, it's pretty interesting, because even when I first met you, Tyler, I had a sense of just, I felt that energy from you, that you had a very kind and just gentle soul, and you exuded that energy. And this was even before my own spiritual awakening, which happened after I met you. So I always had that sense that you led with this sense of kindness, which I always thought was very admirable. because I definitely was not raised with those principles that you mentioned. So it's interesting that even before I embarked on this journey, I was able to pick up on that. So people can definitely feel that. So your vibe doesn't lie. So I think it's really incredible that you still live with those, I guess, those morals that your parents instilled in you as a child. So it's really incredible. So something that you also mentioned is that spirituality is about invisible forces in our personal worlds, which brings us a sense of belonging and purpose. Can you elaborate a little bit more on that concept?
Yeah. I guess just as a personal level, my spirituality is my moral compass. It helps me different. I know what right and wrong is. You know, I understand the difference between right and wrong. But and if I didn't have my spirituality, if I didn't have my religious beliefs in my system that I stick by, I would still think I would still be a good person. But it's just one of those things that it's one of those. The final motivators to continue to do good things. And so that spirituality to me is that sort of moral compass that helps me guide my headed and my heart a little bit. But for other people, it doesn't necessarily have to be that. Spirituality can be, if you're very much into astrology, you know, there's people who believe just as much as I believe in my spirituality. They believe in their astrology and different sun signs, moon signs, things of that sort of nature. And it doesn't, sometimes that helps them with their moral compass, and other times it helps them sort of understand themselves and understand why they would behave the way they would behave, why they feel the things they feel, why they do the things they do. For me, it is more of a higher power than it is the sun and the stars and the moon. But there's really no difference. If you want me to put it bluntly, there really is no difference, I think, in whatever your faith system is, your spiritual self is. We're all looking as human beings to be accepted, and we're all looking for a very similar feeling of happiness and understanding and wanting to fit in with the world. And spirituality for some people is their reasoning and their self-explanation for why they exist in the world and why they do the things that they do. So yeah, I can ramble on, I think, about that a long time, but probably not necessary.
So I want to switch gears a little bit and talk about the music. So can you share your journey with music and why music has become your passion?
Yeah, absolutely. I came from a very, very, very musical family. Every single person in my family is a multi-instrumentalist. Every single person in my family can sing and play piano. And then we have our extra instruments and stuff like that. And growing up, as soon as we showed that we were excited about music, my parents immediately said, cool, let's nurture that. And that was literally everything we did. My parents were so, so nurturing and caring about the things that we seemed to be interested in. And so music for me has just always been a constant. I didn't know that it was weird to play multiple instruments. I didn't know that it was weird to not sing and hum around the house and make up songs. I didn't know that people didn't do that. That was literally my upbringing. And there was literally never a single point. I played the drums when I was little. I played the piano. I played guitar, the saxophone, the clarinet. I've got an accordion. I've got a mandolin, a ukulele. I had all these instruments. And the collection has grown over the years, but there was never a point when my parents said, can you please stop playing, I'm trying to sleep, or can you stop repeating that same song, it's getting annoying. There was never a single point when anyone, my brothers even, who shared very thin walls with my bedroom, They would never knock on my door at 1 or 2 in the morning when I was still playing the piano to say, dude, I have school in the morning or I've got work or something. There was never a point when you were ever shut down with music. And so it has always been a comforting thing. It has always been something that has brought great tranquility to myself. It is my diary. It is my journal to be able to write a song or a poem or lyrics. It has always been there for me as a constant. And so I got into education in music. I teach music to children. I do this because I cannot imagine a world that to live in where music wasn't there as comfort, where music wasn't there to move you. And it took so many years for me to realize this, but there's kids all over the planet who will never, ever know tranquility because of music. They might find it in other ways, and I hope they find it in other ways, but the fact of the matter is, it's just ha owning instruments isn't really, I mean, it's not, not everyone can have that. Not everyone can have the education and the piano lessons and the voice lessons that I had. Not everyone's going to have the support of parents who don't tell them to shut up at 2 in the morning. Not everyone's going to have the things that I was so fortunate to have growing up. And I just, again, I cannot imagine a world where that is possible. So I might be one person, but it is my duty, it is my purpose on this earth to bring the support and the education that I was given, that I was privileged to kids and families who might not ever be able to have that without me or my other coworkers and volunteers if it weren't for us. So music to me is more than just clapping and singing along. Music to me is like a necessity. It is the absolute necessity in my life, and I want to bring that to other people.
Wow, that is truly incredible. So I would love to just tie in what you said earlier, and that is that you feel it is your duty to help and to question, how do I do my part? I think it's truly fantastic that you're able to do that, and that you're able to share what you love, which is music, and share that with others. So I want to talk about your music and the Fifth Star Band. So can you tell us a little bit about that and the journey with the Fifth Star Band?
Yeah, sure. So the Fifth Star Band has been around for, I believe it's 5 years or so. And I have only been in the band since I think October of last year. And I joined the band because one of my very, very dear friends, Wesley Hunt, was the piano player and keyboard before me. We worked together. We've grown very close as friends. We play music, we write together, we jam together, you name it. And there was one point when he goes, "Hey man, my band's looking for somebody to open for us. Would you maybe want to, play a set at," I believe it was at the Store, off of Armitage here in Chicago. And I said, "Yeah, sure, whatever, man, that sounds good." And so I played a show and it was awesome. It felt really good. And so the next chance I had, let me digress for just a second. I put together shows, benefit shows to kind of help causes and stuff around the city. And one of the things that I like to do is I work at Trader Joe's, and I put together things that are just called Trader Shows. Real creative. But the only stipulation to playing in the show, to being one of the acts, is that you have to have a band member who actually works for Trader Joe's. And then the entire store comes out, all of the crew from whatever stores we get come out. And I just really, really needed to have a band fill in for a band that had dropped pretty last minute. And so I said, "Hey, Fifth Star Band, would you like to come and play this show? It's you could be paid if I have an excess, otherwise everything's donated." And they said, "Absolutely done." And so that kind of like really kicked off the relationship between me and the band. And over the next year or two, I have opened for them. I had opened for them more than any other act that they had ever played with over the last 5 years that they've been a band. And so when Wesley was kind of ready to move on from the Fifth Star Band, he had things in his personal life he was taking care of. He had other musical endeavors he wanted to chase and achieve. So he wanted to make sure to leave the band in good hands. The band and I knew each other pretty well at that point, and it was almost on an assumed level that I was just going to take over, and that's what happened. They asked me if I'd be down to play through the end of the year, and the Virgin Hotel show that I played that you were at, that was supposed to be my final show with them, technically. There was no contract or handshake to say I was in the band for forever. It was literally going, let's see how it goes through the end of the year. I'll play 2-3 shows with you guys. I'll just fill in. I don't know how this is going to work out. I've been really bad at keeping bands together. I've always been the lead singer. I've always been the main songwriter. And I was a little bit afraid if I joined the band that I would give some of that up. But those 3 months or so that I was part of the band, the big show at the Virgin that we did, the couple little shows we did, one at Moe's Tavern and the store, it felt so right. It felt so right. And so I had a real big decision to make. I had a in my future, in the next year, I had the plans to take a few steps away from Chicago. And I didn't want to leave the band kind of high and dry, but then life happened, and all of a sudden my plans had changed, and I was going to stay in Chicago for a while longer, and it just made sense that I would join the band and continue to play with them, even through this quarantine, still playing with them, still doing Instagram live shows and stuff like that. So yeah, that's been my journey with the band so far. Yeah, every Friday is the Fifth Star Band Happy Hour open mic, where we invite some people, some acts to play while we're all in lockdown right now and not able to get out and play regular, normal shows. Or at least right now we're starting to open up for smaller shows and stuff. The city is, at least. But we, as a band, one of our band members is a doctor, and he's on the front line. I am a frontline worker at Trader Joe's. And so the idea of all of us coming together, where nearly half the band works on the front lines, and then we just don't want to do that just yet. So we're going to keep doing this open mic, and the open mic has been fantastic. We went from having like 9 people watching for the first time, and now we get a pretty solid 100 people. And if you've ever been to a local show and had 100 people there, it's a pretty decent show. So we've really loved it. I love producing it. Jordan Sawyer, the lead singer of the Fifth Star Band, is the host. And we have had just the absolute most talented individuals on there so far. We've had everything from magicians to musicians. We're in talks with a couple poets actually right now. We've thought about trying to get comedians on. If we have to get a very brave comedian, because there's not really a way to have an audience laugh. But if there's any brave comedians listening, hit me up and we might go on. But yeah.
All right, so something that I'm going to start asking all guests that come on the show is for them to share their favorite quote with me. And the quote that you submitted, I thought was pretty incredible. So you submitted this quote, and it said the following. Just because something gets your wheels turning and your heart pumping doesn't mean it needs to upset you. And I just love that. That is just really incredibly useful advice as well, especially in today's climate. And it's so true. And it really goes to show, even if it excites you, if it triggers you, if it gives you a reaction, it doesn't mean you need to react, right? Take a moment, take a breather. So I thought that was really profound. Can you share with us why that is your favorite quote?
Yeah, that was my introduction to cognitive dissonance. And that was the first time I'd ever heard that phrase before. And funny enough, this was not like some lecture or a professor or some celebrity. This was a friend of mine and a boss named Steve Kroc. And he had mentioned this because we would just sit over at his house and we'd go over business. His business, Swizzle Steve Presents. And then we would just kind of hang out and talk, you know, we might throw back a beer or something like that and just chill and talk about some of the craziest stuff, some of just whatever the current events were, whatever is happening in the world, and whether it was a conspiracy theory, which we both loved to get into and talk about, or if it was, you know, some news story that was going on. And I just remember he would always try to do the devil's advocate thing for me and just let me think through whether, you know, theories or ideas. And there was just one time, I don't even remember specifically what we were talking about, but he had said something that, I guess the word to use now is that triggered me. And I just got so, so mad at him that he would even bring that up, totally, absolutely forgetting the fact that he was my friend, that we were not debating, we were not arguing, we were discussing. We were discussing ideas as intellectually as possible with as much evidence as possible. And I flew off the handle a little bit and he stops me and calms me and goes, whoa, 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 Tyler, we're friends. I'm not angry with you. I'm not yelling at you. I'm not attacking you. You are hearing something for the first time. This is your cognitive dissonance. You're hearing something for the first time that affects you so negatively in your brain that you can't even accept it. You can't even believe that this could be a possibility. And we need to stop right now. And that's when he mentioned what the quote was, that I don't need to be upset if something gets my wheels turning. It doesn't need to tip me one way or another. It doesn't need to push me over the edge. We're just presenting information to each other that this is a discussion. This is not some big event. And for the rest of my life, I have used that quote, that idea, to accept new information, to understand that not everyone is going to have the same mindset. Again, I am not the center of the universe. Everyone else has their own opinions that they're entitled to. Everyone else has thoughts and theories and ideas about the world that we live in because we're human beings. And being human means we question our existence. We question the ideals and things. It's the reason why we grasp on to spirituality. That's the reason we grasp on to religion. It's the reason some people reject those ideas because of the evidence that's presented to them in their lives. And so I've just constantly now used this to remind myself to keep an open mind, to continue to treat others with the respect that I would hope to be treated with, because, again, we're kind of all in this together, and it's not an argument. It's not a debate. I don't look to get in the middle of things that are going to fly off the handle. I don't want to, you know, be on a Facebook chat or something and have someone freak out about something I'm talking about, because I know that suddenly they're not going to listen. They're not going to pay attention to what I'm saying, because it's got their wheels turning. And I refuse to be a person who gets their wheels turning after an idea like that, just because I want everyone to feel accepted and heard. So yeah, that just happens to be, that was one of the first things that when someone asks me, what's your favorite quote? There's a few that I kind of go through, but that one has really changed my life for the better.
I love that. That is so great and very necessary. So I know that you're an advocate for self-love. Can you share with us why food in particular is so healing and comforting for you?
Yeah, I don't know if I have as solid of an answer about why it's so healing for me, but food has always been, I guess, comforting to me. And I've just found over the years, I enjoy cooking in a very similar way that I enjoy making music. I enjoy creating a recipe the same exact way a producer might put together a track or a song, where you go, oh, it needs a little bit of this, or it needs to be a little brighter here, or it needs to be a little more spicy in this section. Whatever descriptors you want to use cooking for me has, you know, you can screw it up. It's fine, whatever. But cooking, it's one of those things where no one's gonna tell me what to do, and I can make my own meals. And I've gotten to the point now where I can just look at a dish and say, cool, I think I can make that. Or I can see a recipe one time and say, cool, I bet I can make a version of that. Let me give it a try. And it is like the most wonderful feeling, and I'm sure you can attest to this, but when you write a song and show somebody a song that you've done, or they watch you at a show and they come up to you and say, that was one of the most amazing things I've ever seen, or that was so beautiful, it reminded me of this or this or this. I get a very similar feeling when I make food for somebody and they go, yo, this is really good. This is fire. This is, these tacos are great. This hamburger is awesome. This paella is amazing. Whatever the hell it is. I get such a good feeling that not only am I making somebody else feel good, but I'm making someone else feel good by giving them a part of myself. Again, like, music is my diary, is my journal. Food is just another page in that whole story. And to be able to tear off a page and say, read this, you know, hear this, taste this, and for them to accept me for who I am based upon what they taste, what they hear, it's comforting. It's what everyone looks towards, acceptance. Everyone wants to be accepted, and food is just one of those ways that I have found people accept me for who I am in all forms, and makes me feel good. So I love to cook, and every time I get to try a new recipe is like, oh man, I heard this new song today, I gotta listen to it again, or I have to try to cover it or something like that. So yeah, cooking and food to me is up there with music.
Well, I want to thank you, Tyler, for being on the show. It was an absolute pleasure getting to know you on a whole new level. I always ask every guest at the end of the show to share a couple of words of wisdom. So I'd love to hear your thoughts as we close out this episode.
Words of wisdom for the listeners. So in all of my classes that I teach, when I teach my kids, at the end of every class, I tell them three things: that you are loved, that you are worthy of love, and you're worthy of all the good things that are going to happen in your life as long as you continue to work hard. And I say that to anybody listening, and I say that to my students on the off chance that they don't hear it from anybody else, because it's really, really, really easy, if you don't hear those things, to forget those things. And even if you don't hear it from somebody you look up to, care about, feel for, today, tomorrow, or this week, you can hear it from me now. So yes, you are loved, you are worthy of love and respect, and you are worthy of all the successes that come to you in your life.
Beautiful. Well, especially that last part really resonated with me. So thank you. Well, let everyone know how they can best support you, where they can follow you and your band.
Sure. My name is Tyler Priest, TylerPriest. My Instagram is my name, Tyler.Priest. You can find me on SoundCloud, Bandcamp. You can search The Fifth Star Band, The Fifth Star Band, at The Fifth Star Gram, or on Spotify, any streaming services, anywhere you can find music, or our website, TheFifthStarBand.com. And check out our Instagram. We post mostly every day. We have some new stuff every Tuesday where our saxophone player does a cool little saxophone bit. We do our open mic on Fridays at 6. And you're always welcome to look me up on Facebook, Instagram, whatever. Send me a DM, look me up, and start a conversation with me. I would love to talk.
Amazing. Thank you so much. Till next time.
Yeah, no problem.
Thank you so much for listening. To stay in touch, please subscribe to my newsletter over at vibequeenmusic.com to stay up to date with my music, guided meditations, which I do on Instagram Live, Monday through Friday, 3 p.m. Central Time, the blog, and of course this podcast, Vibe Talk Music. Till next time, and remember, self-awareness is the gateway to inner peace. Mm-hmm.